The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Threatening to deport citizens to prisons in El Salvador, arresting people as they attend citizenship interviews, withdrawing funding from public broadcasting, expecting universities to report students who commit conduct violations, all exactly what you'd expect from an authoritarian regime. But those examples don't come from Nazi Germany or from Viktor Orban's Hungary. They come from Donald Trump's America. Since retaking office in January, Trump has moved to increase control over every facet of American life, with more and more action being taken in recent weeks. Now, here to look at that drift towards authoritarianism in more detail, Scott Lucas, professor and political analyst at the Clinton Institute at UCD. Scott, good morning and welcome.
Very good morning to you, Pat.
Now, I've been looking at all the things he's been doing. I mean, Harvard faced him down, said, no, we are not changing our rules. We're going to stick with our DEI policies, et cetera, et cetera. And then Trump says, well, that's political. We're going to withdraw your tax-free status from you, or he threatened to.
Yeah. Oh, in fact, I have no doubt that the funding cut of more than $2 billion from the government will come into effect with the prospect that the government may cut even further. Now, Harvard in the short term can afford that, but it's the wider principle that you're talking about here. And let's be clear here. The Trump administration will say this is all about anti-Semitism. It's not. What the Trump folks want to do is to get control of Harvard's curriculum. They want to get control of the student body in that they want unrestricted access. For example, to possibly go in and detain students as they have on other campuses. They want the ability to dictate who can be hired and fired at the faculty level.
I mean, this is absolute Nazi stuff.
You know, up until this week, Pat, I wouldn't say authoritarian. You know, I would always say Donald Trump was a wannabe autocrat, that he and Elon Musk had aspirations of absolute power. But it's like, no, they're not there. I think we need to be honest with your listeners. The U.S. government is now there. They are now authoritarian.
Where is it coming from? Because the letter that was sent to Harvard was very detailed, and it demanded that they reduce the power of students and faculty members over the university's affairs, report foreign students who commit conduct violations immediately, and bring in an outside party to ensure that each academic department is viewpoint diverse. I mean, this is not written by Donald Trump.
It's not written by Donald Trump, Pat, but it starts with Donald Trump. And let me also preface this by saying Harvard had actually given away to the administration in ways before this. They'd actually removed the head of the Center for Middle East Studies. They had actually cut their religion and conflict program. But what Donald Trump wants is he wants a complete capitulation. Donald Trump understands personal power. He doesn't understand the issues quite often that he's talking about, but he understands personal power. And beyond Trump wanting personal power, Pat, there's a dimension that I think hasn't been picked up in the press. And that is Donald Trump, of course, is a graduate of an Ivy League university.
Yeah, but who did his exams for him?
Well, there are a lot of questions about what Trump said he graduated first in his class at the University of Pennsylvania, at the Wharton Business School. It transpired, in the words of one of his professors, he was the dumbest bleep student ever. Very few students there actually knew who Donald Trump was. Trump has this resentment that he isn't hailed as being the high achiever. So who do you go after? You go after the other Ivy League schools. It has not just been Harvard. Columbia has been forced to capitulate because of a funding cut. He's going after Brown in Rhode Island. He's going after Princeton in New Jersey. And it goes beyond Trump. I need to emphasize this, Pat. It's not just a personal thing. There are officials in the Trump administration who, for their own animosity towards education, but also their own view of power, they want control. And I'm referring to Stephen Miller, for example, Trump's domestic advisor. And there is a precedent for this, Pat, that people, I think, have forgotten. Before Trump tried to do this in his power grab, in Florida over the last few years, Ron DeSantis, who wanted to be president as governor, has effectively gutted the Florida education system by firing members of boards of trustees, firing faculty members, and purging curricula.
It does seem, though, as if they're flying in the face of history and progress. I mean, the reason we are so successful here in certain kinds of activities is because we have an educated population. There has been a problem, and it's not just the Republicans. Successive governments, be they Democrat or Republican, have made it very difficult for the ordinary middle-class kid to get to college and come out without a huge weight of debt over his or her head.
Yeah, I, you know, if I was to start off with the initial part of it, can you be an authoritarian and successfully run your education system, we've got precedents that can be done. I can take you back to the 30s in Germany, where education was purged under the Nazis, and they actually were quite effective in getting the right type of educators. We could talk about China and its education system. But the difference here that you're talking about, of course, is that America doesn't just have a public model of education. It has this private model with these spiraling education costs. And the fact of the matter is that purging all these faculty members, purging these students, will not help many people get into the higher education system on an affordable basis. And what do the Trump people do then?
You see, the guy who is there on the assembly line building fridges or cookers or cars or whatever it might be, time was he would hope his son would get or daughter would get to college and that they would be better off than their parents. That was the ambition in America. That has stalled for Americans.
Yeah, but the way that Trump and his supporters play it quite often is, why would you want to go to the elite universities? Why would you want to go to a Harvard or a Columbia? They're all lefties. They're all woke. They're all Marxist, et cetera. So I don't think it's at that level where this cuts. It's more as if you're a family and you want your child to go to the state universities, which cost a lot less than the private universities. They've been able to do that in the past, but those costs are increasing at state universities. And what happens if you cannot get the basic skills, a university degree that's needed for many of the jobs in the United States? What do you do then?
Another aspect of authoritarianism is lifting people literally off the street and incarcerating them without trial. He's doing that. And even the latest case of a guy being at a citizenship interview and being lifted by people who do not identify themselves. They are masked and hooded and bundled into cars and taken away to God knows where.
Yeah, this was a student named Madawi, and he had actually gone to ground for a few weeks because he has seen other students being detained, sometimes by masked people, even though they have legal right to be in the United States. But he got called in by Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and you can't refuse the call in because it's like your path to a possible citizenship is then blocked. He went in, and then they arrested him on the spot. Now, in his case, Pat, we know where he is. They're fighting that in the courts. Mm. But in the case, for example, of Rumeysa Öztürk, a student who was at Tufts University doing postgraduate research, who had written an editorial about the Gaza conflict, she was lifted from the street by masked men, and we still do not know exactly where she is.
Now, the Supreme Court has insisted that no one can be deported without their day in court. That is one of the unexpected ruling from the Supreme Court, but they've said that.
They've said that, but let's take this from education to immigration. The Trump administration is disappearing people. And I know what that word means. I know what it meant in Argentina in the 1970s. I know what it's meant in China in the past. I know what it's meant in Russia. I know what it's meant in Iran. They're disappearing people where the courts cannot reach them. So if you move from education to immigration, the Supreme Court ruled on a case about Gilmar Abrego García. Now, he is a legal resident of the United States from El Salvador. That legal protected status was granted in 2019. He works in the U.S. His family is there. His children are there. They seized García, and like more than 230 Venezuelans before him, they sent him to the maximum security, and that's a polite word for it, the overcrowded detention facilities in El Salvador. The courts, all the way to the Supreme Court, said you have got to, quote, facilitate his return. And that was a unanimous Supreme Court decision. And the Trump administration flat out said no. And let me take a few seconds to say how they said no, because this is what's even more troubling. When the El Salvador president, Nayib Bukele, came for a sit-down with Trump in the White House, they hailed him. He's wonderful. He's taking all these deportees. The Trump administration lied that García was an illegal. He's not. They went further. Bukele and the Trump administration lied that he's a terrorist. There's been no evidence produced of that. They lied that he's a member of the MS-13 gang. No evidence produced. So they've repeatedly lied about García, but let me walk you back. We only know about the García case because his family reported it and the Trump administration owned up to an administration error. In that case of the 238 Venezuelans, not a single piece of evidence has been produced for the claim that they are gang members or terrorists or even criminals. Indeed, judges have come out and said that they have not found criminal records on the Venezuelans who can be identified so far.
So they're in El Salvador in this hellhole of a prison. They're in large cages, 60 to 80 people in each of the cages. I mean, how many of them will actually ever emerge from this hellhole?
We don't know, because the Trump administration will not give the names of these individuals. You've had to count on families coming forward and saying that they're there. The Trump administration have deleted them from the database of migrants. In other words, they're disappeared. And again, a lot of people who disappeared, and it may not happen this time, we hope it don't, but a lot of people who disappeared in Argentina in the 1970s or in Chile in the 1970s, they didn't come back.
Now, he's been targeting broadcasters as well, public broadcasters. And, you know, there is, if you like, an opposition broadcasting regime to the Newsmax and the Fox propaganda that's coming from the Trump side. I watched them dump on Caitlin Collins the other day from CNN, and there was a misogynistic element to that dumping.
Yeah, I mean, the specific with CNN is Caitlin Collins, who, again, is one of the people who can still get into the White House. Remember, a lot of reporters, like Associated Press, are now barred from it. She just simply reminded Trump, she said, look, you had promised to abide by the Supreme Court decision in the Garcia case, this man who has disappeared. And Trump just turned on her and said, this is why no one watches your program. This is a horrible question. And he then took a puffball question from someone else about how great it was to get rid of terrorists.
One of the remarks they made about Garcia, he's not exactly a model dad. This was their excuse for sending someone to a hellhole. And whether it was true or not, I don't know. But, I mean, it shows how petty the whole thing is.
Yes, my kids, on those grounds, I could be in El Salvador as well. I mean, I haven't exactly always been a model dad, but I would say very few of us can be, like, perfect.
Now, there are all sorts of really bad things going on. Besides the trade war, which it looks like it is wrongheaded from the very beginning and not having the effect that Trump hoped it would have. But then you see the unseemly insider trading on the part of Trump and his cronies, and Marjorie Taylor Greene buying and selling shares in an advantageous way around the time of Trump's blinking U-turn.
I'm just going to put the basic facts out there, Pat, to remind people that on the day that Donald Trump decided to pull back the tariffs to a baseline of 10% on all countries, at 9:37 a.m., he went on to Truth Social, his media platform, and he said, now is a great time to buy DJT. Now, those are his initials, but they're also his initials of his stock listing on the NASDAQ. He made the announcement less than 4 hours later that the tariffs were going to come down. Between those 4 hours, there was a huge series of what are called calls that are put on the stock market. And calls are, we're going to make our buys now in anticipation of where the stock price is going to be a few hours later. Those people who got in on the ground floor, well, DJT rose 21.7% in that day alone. So we're talking about millions, billions of dollars that could have been made. And if you don't believe me, go to Donald Trump. Because later on that day, after he made the announcement, he got a few of those people in the White House and said, look, he made $500 billion today. Look, he made $500 million today. Look, he made $700 million today. So he's absolutely bragging about the possible manipulation of the market. But who's going to prosecute him?
Who's in the – no one's going to prosecute him. He's even controlled the people who are in the SEC.
Yeah.
But who – you know, the adults that were in the room in the last Trump administration, people like John Bolton, who quickly were removed or well, they were removed and then they became publicly disenchanted with him. Is there anybody there who's going to call it out? I mean, people keep on saying that Bessent is not a stupid man.
No, Bessent's not a stupid man. And he, in a sense, can try to limit the damage. And if you talk specifically about tariffs, he and Kevin Hassett, who's the head of the National Economic Council, they're the ones that went to Trump and said, look, you've got to row back on the tariffs except for China because of the damage being caused. But they're not going to call Trump out publicly. You don't have the people like you had in the first term, Pat, like James Mattis at Defense or John Kelly, the general who was chief of staff, Rex Tillerson, Secretary of State, H.R. McMaster, National Security Advisor. You've got basically, and if you don't believe me, look at Trump's footage of his cabinet meeting, the nodding dogs. You've got the nodding dogs. He goes around the table to say, how am I doing? How am I doing? You're brilliant. This is great. This is a dawn for America.
But it reminds me of movies that you have with Henry VIII surrounded by sycophants or Julius Caesar surrounded by sycophants who have no function other than to nod their heads.
It goes back to the authoritarian, Pat, because what you do first of all is you remove people within your inner circle that can challenge you. And you not only make sure there's no one who challenges you at the cabinet table, you've got the U.S. agencies, which is why Elon Musk was important. Then you've got the media. And let me add to what we just said about CNN. Look, a lot of people don't like CNN. Leave that to the side. National Public Radio and the Public Broadcasting Service are the small but elite public broadcasting sector in the United States. I've listened to them for decades. And they are going to be run to the ground because they provide some type of apolitical analysis and news. And you don't want that. So you go after government, media, and take us back where we started, you go after the universities.
What is going to happen with the Supreme Court? I mean, it shows that the Supreme Court have concerns about due process and about respect for the rule of law and indeed for the courts, because you know that old line about, you know, they came for me and no one's, they came for you and nobody shouted stop, and then they came for someone else, no one shouted stop, then they come for you and there's no one left. The Supreme Court must be feeling a bit like that, that if Trump keeps going after lower courts, that it will all come back to the Supreme Court and Trump may come for them too.
Well, it's already happening. Now, there have been a series of cases that have gone before the Supreme Court, apart from the Garcia case. Some of them, the Trump folks have won some time to keep doing what they're doing. And others, they've been told, look, you need to row back on this. When Amy Coney Barrett, who remember was a very conservative justice appointed just before the 2020 election, when she voted with the moderates on the court, she's been receiving death threats. And she has been called out by Trump and others on Truth Social. So in other words, the attempt here is to politicize the judiciary and intimidate them into compliance.
Now, Elon Musk, in or out, I mean, he's suffered a number of setbacks to the share price, even though it did recover a little bit on foot of Trump's reversal. But it seems he's got to stop production of certain cars because he can't get the parts from China.
About one-third of Elon Musk components come from abroad, and a large percentage of those come from China. And you're absolutely right. The reason why Elon Musk was very much opposed to Trump's tariffs and why he got into a public dispute with the warrior protectionist, Peter Navarro, was because Musk was going to take a hit on this economically. Well, now he's taking the hit. Does it mean he's out in terms of influence? No. It was sort of overblown that it was being forced out. There's a legal problem in that Musk's status as a special government employee ends at the end of May. So they've got to come clean on the fact, oh, he's not part of the government anymore. But he still is vital on social media to rally support for Trump. He's still vital.
So he can't afford to fall out. Trump can't afford to fall out with Musk.
No, they're codependent. And the thing is, Musk will fight back. Musk will bite back like he has against certain Trump administration members like Navarro. Oh. So right now, they're still joined at the hip.
Now, another aspect of the autocracy is Doge having access to IRS and the Social Security being dismantled. This is all part of the authoritarian playbook.
That's where it all started, Pat. Walk back to the first few days after January 20th, and the first thing that the so-called Department of Government Efficiency, which is not a department, went into is they went and they stole government records from the Treasury. They stole records concerning millions of Americans covering trillions of dollars. They then went to the Department of Energy, Department of Education, the U.S. Agency for International Development, the State Department. They've gone into the Department of Defense because information's power.
Yeah. Now, the resistance, there's a website called The Resistance, which people can get all the latest, every outrage that's committed by the administration you can find there. But the visible resistance, Bernie Sanders and AOC on their Fighting Oligarchy tour, they're drawing huge crowds, even in red states.
Yeah, I mean, they drew, I think, 36,000 in Arizona. They do 20,000 the next night. You know, they're packing people in as they go across this because—
Utah, Idaho.
Yeah, these are deep red states. So it's actually a fairly clever strategy, which is we're not going to talk to, like, converted Democrats in Democrat states. We're going to go to people who are going to be affected by all this and say, look, is this what you really want for the future of your country? But it's not just AOC and Bernie Sanders. One thing we don't tend to see, Pat, because we always talk about what's happening in Washington, is 50 different states, 50 different state governments, many, many local governments, and many people at the grassroots level don't want the Trump way as the future of America. They don't want authoritarianism. You won't necessarily see it as a single move in Washington, but you will see various movements that begin to say, we've got to find an alternative to this.
His poll numbers on every metric are way down.
Yeah, he starts off above 50% in terms of his approval rating. That's down to about 45.5. But what's more striking is his disapproval rating was around 41%, and it's now up to 51. And what I think that means is that a lot of Americans who are sort of on the fence about Trump, well, now the rubber's hit the road. He's the one in power, and they just aren't liking what they're seeing.
Some of the comments. The big question about all of these stories of people being disappeared, law firms being attacked, and we haven't talked about that, and universities gutted. Why are there so many ordinary citizens of these organizations willing to perform these actions for the administration? And that gets down to even the guys in the hoods lifting people off the street. Yeah. I mean, why are people... Is it like Nazi Germany, the ordinary Germans just fell into line?
Well, let's talk about contemporary cases. In the past few years, Pat, I've covered other cases like Syria. I cover Iran on a daily basis. I cover Russia on a daily basis. I cover China. And in cases like that, you have people who simply just want to keep their jobs. They want to keep their jobs. Sure. They want to keep a roof over their heads. If they don't carry out what they're commanded to do, they might lose all that. So it's their own livelihoods that are held hostage when you have the move towards the authoritarian.
So you have young interns who say, I'm not going to work for that law firm because they've bent the knee, but the interns have little enough to lose.
Yeah, you know, they can say that, but then eventually if you know, they try to get a job in the profession, what if every law firm bends the knee? You know, where do you go then? What if every university caves in? Where do you go if you're a faculty member? You know, where do you go if every local government decides that it simply is going to capitulate? You know, and again, that's the way that autocracy works at one level. I think the silver lining of this is, and I hear I have to defer to John Stewart, who I think is one of the great political commentators of our time, which is we'd be in even more trouble if the Trump administration wasn't so inept about how they're doing this. I don't want to downplay the seriousness of this authoritarianism that disappeared. But if they cannot get control of the economy, if they continue with the tariffs fiasco, it's a race against time. Do they destroy the system before the system comes back and gets them for being incompetent?
Well, eventually, whether we'll all live to see it, some of these people might end up literally as well as metaphorically up against the wall facing 12 rifles for treason. Anyway, this final comment. Thank God for China with the backbone to stand up to the bully boy. If the EU could only grow a spine and follow suit, Trump would be beaten.
Two comments. First of all, I don't believe in jumping from one fire into another. And I think just simply going and praising China as supposedly being our salvation, given the serious issues there, wouldn't go there. Secondly, on the EU, it moves slowly. It's 27 countries. But I think the EU, beginning with Vladimir Putin's invasion of Ukraine in 2022, has actually stepped up much more to the mark than it had in previous years.
Scott Lucas, professor and political analyst at the Clinton Institute in UCD, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.